I'm Anne Maria Watt.
And I'm Sue Lincoln. This is Rue Radio.
Modern medicine seems pretty distant from old folk traditions, but that hasn't stopped Pennington Biomedical Research Center from investigating the healing potential of native Louisiana plants. Travis Lux has more.
Earlier this week, Peter Cooley gave his inaugural reading as Louisiana's Poet Laureate. Anne Maria Watt asked the Detroit native how living in Louisiana has shaped his work.
About a month ago, researchers discovered a new species of human ancestor, Homo naledi. One of the scientists from that team is LSU's own Dr. Juliet Brophy. Wallace Watkins spoke with her.
Not sure what to do with your caladium plants? Dan Gill has answers.
Louisiana's candidates for governor have offered more generalities than specifics when it comes to their tax plans. Sue Lincoln looks at where the candidates stand on that issue as part of Capital Access's ongoing coverage of the 2015 gubernatorial race. But first, the news.
Welcome back to Rue Radio. I'm Sue Lincoln.
And I'm Anne Maria Watt. Potato bean, lizard's tail, coral bean, lots of Cajun and Creole folk remedies are centered around native Louisiana plants. But those same plants may help improve modern medicine, too. Scientists at Pennington Biomedical Research Center are trying to determine whether or not compounds from native plants are effective in treating diabetes. Turns out some of these plants are pretty tasty, too. WRKF's Travis Lux went to find out more from the researchers.
On a piece of land along the Atchafalaya River, Larry Alon is collecting plants.
That's Apios americana root. You can eat it raw, but they're better cooked. Yeah.
What's it taste like?
A starchy potato. Potato is the chicken of the vegetable world. We can make supper.
But we're not here to make supper. We're here for science. Alon is a botanist for the U.S. Geological Survey's National Wetlands Research Center. And he's part of a new study out of Pennington Biomedical Research Center investigating the healing potential of native Louisiana plants. The goal of this study is to figure out whether any of the plants used in Cajun and Creole folk medicines might be helpful for treating diabetes. Generally, you might not expect folk medicine and modern medicine to work together like this. But that might be the thing about the study that excites Ray Brasseur the most. He's an anthropologist with the University of Louisiana Lafayette.
You know, it requires a certain amount of respect for traditional knowledge. And that is not always how science works, because in a lot of ways, and especially during the 20th century at different times, science has tried to replace traditional knowledge. But as a result, a whole lot of knowledge has just been thrown to the side. And now, some people are believing that there's a value in taking another look.
One of the plants they're taking another look at today is the lizard's tail. Here's Larry Alon again.
It's just a common wetland plant and easy to find, generally grows in the shade.
Lizard's tail has this stalk of teeny white flowers that gradually taper toward the end, sort of resembling the proportions of a lizard's tail. It was sought by Cajuns and Creoles for its anti-inflammatory properties, and it would have been either steeped into a tea or applied directly to wounds. Once back in his lab, Alon will send the sample of lizard's tail to collaborators at Rutgers University. The folks at Rutgers will prepare an extract from that sample and then send the extract to Anique Boudreau, who works at Pennington Biomedical.
And then we do the experiments on the actual cells here in the lab. In our case, what we're looking for are effects on insulin signaling.
In other words,
things that are related to diabetes.
But it's not easy work. For one, plants are pretty chemically complicated. There can be thousands of compounds in a given plant sample. And the chemical makeup can change with the seasons, even for the same plant.
You know, that complexity makes things difficult in a way, but it also means that there's a huge potential there.
And they've been pretty happy with their results so far. Overall, they've tested about 100 extracts, and about 10% of those may be effective. It's still early in the process, though, so she's quick to add this caveat.
When I say that it was effective in increasing insulin-mediated AKT phosphorylation in a context of insulin resistance in this particular muscle cell line that's growing in a dish.
So what does that mean?
We're at the very, very beginning here. It's effective in treating diabetes.
But due to the fact that the National Institute of Health recently renewed funding for Pennington's study, the research is poised to continue for at least 5 more years. For WRKF News, I'm Travis Lux.
Curiosity opens up new worlds and new possibilities, introduces you to fresh ideas. Ideas like the ones WRKF's own Travis Lux reported on. Scientists discovering ways old remedies can contribute to modern medicine. Every day, WRKF feeds your curiosity, and the way we do it is with your financial support. Become an active supporter of WRKF. Please take that important but easy step now with a contribution of $5 or $10 a month. Give at WRKF.org or call 855-893-9753.
Last year, Louisiana's former poet laureate, Ava Lovell Hayman, summed up her job like this.
The duties of the poet laureate are to represent poetry inside of the state and outside of the state to represent Louisiana. We have a huge cultural presence outside the state, but the state is not known for having poets.
This week on Insight, Ann Maria Wadd sits down with Peter Cooley, Louisiana's new poet laureate.
Every 2 years, Louisiana's governor appoints a poet laureate. In August, Governor Jindal appointed Peter Cooley. Cooley is the director of the Creative Writing Program at Tulane University. He has authored 10 full-length collections of poetry and has been published in magazines such as The New Yorker and The Atlantic. He gave his inaugural reading as poet laureate earlier this week and joins me from the studios of WWNO in New Orleans. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Okay, so I did want to ask, you are actually from Detroit, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But you've spent most of your life here in Louisiana.
I have been here over half my life, yes.
Okay, and how would you say Louisiana has shaped your work?
Well, at first, as I've said in many interviews, when I first came here from Wisconsin, I thought I would be writing about all the flora and fauna and so on, and I found I could write almost nothing. I was so overwhelmed by the climate and the locale. But it has definitely seeped in and influenced almost everything that I write. For one thing, I think there's a kind of liquid sound which has entered my poems through living down here, through just absorbing Southern speech, and from the slowness of life here compared to the Midwest. And then the weather and the light has affected my poetry profoundly. I love the light here. I love the always shifting light, which I've written about in many poems. The sky is never still here. When I lived in Chicago, evening would set in around 3:30, and night would be there around 5, and that was it, right? And then the morning might come around 10 a.m. really, the good gray city, the president of University of Chicago called it once. But here, the sky is always shifting and changing, and I love that.
And New Orleans itself has actually changed quite a bit since you've been there. I know I was just reading something about how you actually lived through Katrina, and that seemed to have a profound impact on your work.
Yes. We did not lose our house. We had the roof redone. We had a new floor heater put in. Well, we did not suffer major damage. But living here and staying in our house during that time, which we did, certainly made me realize the preciousness of life. And it accelerated my writing, actually.
You told The Advocate a couple months ago that you had written some 30 poems following Katrina.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And almost immediately upon returning to your home. Is that right?
Before returning to my home, we were staying in the Chalstrom House of the Episcopal Church on Carrollton Avenue. The first poem I wrote in the Chalstrom House, and the second poem I wrote during this, when we returned to our own home, but it was written right after Katrina.
And so, as poet laureate, what do you hope to accomplish in your 2-year term?
I've had a lot of experience teaching creative writing for over 40 years, and I've worked in poetry in the schools in Wisconsin. I've taught in a mental hospital. I've taught in a prison. So I hope to do community workshops in various places. I think one of the things I'd like to do in this term is to show people through the editorship, through giving readings, and through doing workshops, how essential poetry is, how much a part of our lives it is, whether or not we choose to see that.
Peter, thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you.
You can go to WRKF.org to hear Peter read two poems that he wrote right after Hurricane Katrina. For Insight, I'm Anne Maria Wadd.
Thanks for joining us on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Discover with us. Listen to podcasts of shows and segments you've missed at WRKF.org.
You're listening to Rue Radio. I'm Anne Maria Wadd.
And I'm Sue Lincoln. WRKF's Fall Pledge Drive is going on right now. Public radio is very different from any other media. We don't focus on ratings and profit margins. We examine the issues, provide comprehensive analysis, and examine topics in a way few other broadcast outlets can. Your financial commitment gives us the means to push ourselves to do even better. Your contribution makes a difference. It helps keep public radio values on the air. Please give online at WRKF.org or call with your gift now at 855-893-9753.
Homo naledi is the newest member of humanity's family tree. The species was discovered in a cave near Johannesburg, South Africa, by a group of researchers. Dr. Juliette Brophy was among the team. Brophy is a paleoanthropologist at LSU. For this week's Louisiana's Lab, WRKF's Wallace Watkins asked Brophy what this discovery means.
We have a specimen known as Australopithecus africanus, locally known as Mrs. Ples. Here, that's my favorite fossil. Every time I see her, I get all dressed up.
Dr. Juliette Brophy, a paleoanthropologist at LSU, is part of the team that discovered a new human ancestor, Homo naledi. The naledi fossils were recently found in a cave in South Africa.
The genus Australopithecus is the one right before our genus, the genus Homo.
Homo naledi is already differentiating itself from other species. For one, remains of 15 individuals have been found. Other species have been determined based on as little as one tooth.
And now we show up and we have 190 teeth. We had entire skeletal pieces. That's huge. That's unprecedented in paleoanthropology. We definitely knew we were making history.
Second, naledi has a mixture of both modern and primitive features.
So the shape of the skull looks more modern, but the size of the skull is only about a third from modern humans.
It was conventionally thought that as the brain got larger, teeth got smaller. Large brain size led to developments, like using fire to cook and knives to cut food. Because brains were working harder, the teeth didn't have to. That was the theory.
With Homo naledi, we have a small brain size and small teeth. That was not the trajectory.
They still don't know how old the fossils are. That's the next step.
If it comes out to be less than a million, well then the evolutionary tree is a lot more bushy than we previously thought.
Dr. Brophy says this discovery of naledi has thrown a wrench into the theory of human evolution.
We had some preconceived ideas about what the genus Homo meant. And we need to redefine that to really understand what the genus Homo means.
For Louisiana's Lab, I'm Wallace Watkins.
Support for healthcare and science coverage on Louisiana's Lab comes from Bazile, Saxe & Wilson, serving the legal and business needs of people and companies throughout Louisiana, and from ExxonMobil Baton Rouge, supporting education in science, technology, engineering, and math.
You just heard Louisiana's Lab during Rue Radio, but you probably listened to All Things Considered and Here and Now. What you hear on WRKF enriches your understanding of the world, and you only get it on WRKF.
When you contribute right now, you make it possible for WRKF to continue serving you. Please give just $5 or $10 a month at WRKF.org or call 855-893-9753.
Welcome to Bayou Garden on 89.3 WRKF. I'm Dan Gill with the LSU Ag Center. Plantings of caladiums are generally past their prime by the time we reach the early part of October, or they will be soon, and it's time to decide what you want to do with them. Your choices are pull them up and throw them away, leave the tubers in the ground, or dig them up, store the tubers over the winter, and plant them again next year. Now, the great thing about using caladiums as a bedding plant in shady areas of our landscape is that you can get more than 1 year of colorful foliage from your initial investment. Now, the growing conditions have to be good. Caladiums like to grow in partial shade,
If you plant them in poor growing conditions, they're not going to do as well. So the tubers, when you dig them up, should be as large or larger than when you planted them. If they're small, they may not come back well next year, or they may not be worth saving. So check the tubers, make sure about the size that they were when you planted them, or even bigger, and that means the quality is still there. Now, if you want to leave the caladium tubers in the ground, it's something you can try doing. This is not necessarily the best way to save them over the winter, but it's certainly something you can give a try. The problem we have with leaving the caladium tubers in the ground over the winter is not necessarily the cold. The ground here in our area doesn't ever freeze in the wintertime. It's really the chilled soil along with high moisture content, because we get a lot of rain in the wintertime, and caladium tubers, when they're dormant, just can't take that cold, wet soil condition, and they may rot out. But if you've got your caladiums in a really well-drained area, there's nothing else you need to do with that bed over the winter, you don't want to plant pansies or anything there, then you might try leaving the tubers there just to see how they do. If they don't come up well the next year, well, then you know that you want to dig them and store them over the winter. And digging up the caladium tubers and storing them over the winter is really the most reliable way to keep the caladium tubers in good shape and ensure that they come back very nice for you the next year. Now, you want to dig them up when many of the leaves have turned yellow and started to fall over. Don't wait till they disappear. A lot of times people wait until the caladium foliage is just about all gone. Well, that makes it hard to find the tubers and dig them up. So well before the foliage disappears, when it just starts looking tired and starts falling over, dig them then. That's usually sometime in October that we dig those up. Now be careful not to damage the tubers when you dig them up. Leave the foliage attached to the tubers. Now you can lay them all in an out-of-the-way area, like under a carport or in a shed, on some layers of newspaper, or sometimes I'll just take them and put them all up in a bucket. But don't pack them too tight if you're going to put them in a bucket. Now, while you lay them out or after you put them in the bucket, you want to let that foliage turn brown. It takes about a week to 2 weeks, and the foliage will gradually turn a tan color, and it will easily detach from the tuber when you tug on it. The tubers then are ready to store. You can brush off any extra soil that you may see on the tubers, but don't worry about a little dirt clinging to them. It's not that big of a deal. Now, take your tubers and store them in an old nylon stocking or a mesh bag like you get onions or crawfish in, or a paper bag or a cardboard box. The container needs to breathe. Store them inside at room temperature. They need to be stored at around 70 degrees. So don't put them out in the garage. Don't put them out in a shed. Store them inside your house in an out-of-the-way closet. Check them occasionally over the winter. Make sure they're doing okay. And don't forget, you might want to label those tubers with the color of the foliage, so when it comes time to plant them next year, you know the colors of the foliage and you can plant them accordingly. This is Bayou Garden. I'm Dan Gill. Join us next week at this time for more on your garden. Podcasts of the show are available at wrkf.org.
The West Baton Rouge Museum is celebrating the centennial of the town of Addis with their exhibit 100 Years of Addis, which runs till November 15th. For more information, visit westbatonrougemuseum.org.
This week and next week, Capital Access takes a closer look at the important issues in this fall's gubernatorial race. We're going to make sure that you go into the voting booth prepared, so we have the candidates' takes on everything from education to coastal protection. Today, we take a look at the tax plans of the four major candidates.
How are the candidates for governor planning to fix the state's deficit, and what will that mean for the taxes you pay? Here's what they've been saying in general. Scott Angel.
The legislature will ultimately make the decision, as so they should, on the tax credits and the exemptions and the rebates. But we need economists in the room helping us inform the decision of return on investment.
Jay Darden.
Reduce the personal income tax rates, the corporate income tax rates, and when we do that, every exemption, every credit, every exclusion is on the table to be looked at because we're reducing the rates.
John Bell Edwards.
We've got to fix this structural deficit by making sure that we end tax giveaways that cost too much and don't produce enough return on investment. We're going to grow the economy in a way that produces net new revenue to meet our obligations.
And then there's David Vitter.
The entire plan is at davidvitter.com.
Vitter has given some specifics on how he would cut state spending.
Unnecessary state cars in many agencies, consulting contracts, giving food stamp benefits to folks who have already died.
And which tax credit should be eliminated.
The wind and solar tax credit is still probably $20 million. Purchase of recycling equipment, $4 million. Converting your vehicle into a hybrid, $4 million.
While those would please the oil and gas industry, one of Darden's proposals won't.
The horizontal drilling tax credit is one that we ought to look at reducing.
Angel says.
I think movie tax credits needs to be capped.
While Edwards says.
We have to look at all of them.
For Capital Access, I'm Sue Lincoln.
Support for Capital Access comes from Southern Strategy Group, governmental relations, strategic planning, and public relations in Baton Rouge, and Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, supporting Louisiana agriculture through education.
For more episodes of Capital Access, just visit WRKF.org, and while you're online, why not donate to our fall pledge drive? Capital Access is exactly the type of local programming that you've asked for and that your donations support. A contribution of just $5 or $10 per month helps keep Capital Access on the air. Please give online at WRKF.org or call with your gift now at 855-893-9753. Good afternoon. I'm Anne Maria Wadd.
And I'm Sue Lincoln. You're listening to Rue Radio. The United Way Jambalaya Jam will be held October 8th from 5 to 8 p.m. at North Boulevard Town Square. Come out for food, drinks, entertainment, and a cooking competition. More information can be found at cauw.org.
And on October 10th, also at North Boulevard Town Square, is the Capital City Beer Festival from 1 to 5 p.m. Try beers from around the country and the world in a relaxed, friendly outdoor environment. Visit capcitybeerfest.org for more information.
That's all for the show this week. Follow us on Twitter at WRKF and find us on Facebook. Coming up on Out to Lunch, Stephanie Regal sits down with leaders from Baton Rouge's dog-based businesses.
Our theme music was composed by John Tully. Rue Radio is produced by Nick Jansen.
This has been your food for thought. Until next week.